Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
Girl, loved the mass, I watched the swirl of smoke from candles burning, while Mary looked up yearning. I got confirmed and I confessed, I really felt that I was blessed. Plus I love my uniform, so did the boy who lived next door. But something changed when I became of age, those things I thought were true. Someday I'd break the big taboo. Oh, letting go, oh God.
Letting go, oh God. Hello and welcome to Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. I'm Doubter 5, and on the phone we have with us Wombat. Say hi, Wombat.
Hi, Wombat.
There he
What's
is.
Everybody?
They made it in. Okay. Very good. This is WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM live right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Today is June 20th. Tomorrow will be the first day of summer. Boy, you couldn't tell it. It should have started about a week ago. We get into the 90s almost every day now. This is the Free Thought Radio Hour. If you're not listening to it on June 20th at 7 o'clock p.m., then you're listening to a rebroadcast or a podcast, so please ignore anything that may be topical. But since we are live today, you can call in and join the conversation at 865-333-5937. That's 333-5937. And Digital Free Thought Radio Hour is a call-in talk radio show about atheism, free thought, rational thought, humanism, and the sciences. And conversely, we'll also talk about religion, religious faiths, gods, holy books, and superstition. And if you get the feeling that you're the only non-believer in Knoxville or East Tennessee, well, you're just not. There are several atheist, free-thinking, and rationalist groups that exist right here in Knoxville, and I'll be telling you how you can connect with them after the mid-show break. And did you know that there was an atheist call-in television show broadcasting here in Knoxville as well? Matter of fact, it's on the air right now. It's been going for over 8 years now, and you can see it if you flip your TV over to Comcast Channel 12, I believe it is, and you can see it from 6:30 to 7:30 every Wednesday night. Of course, we don't want you to do that unless you turn the sound down, because then you wouldn't hear us. And we're here every Wednesday from 7 o'clock to 8 o'clock on WOZO Radio. That's the Free Thought Radio Hour. And in spite of what Steve Martin would have you think, there are a lot of atheist songs out there, and you'll be hearing some of them right here on this program and generally on the station as they are in rotation. Tonight's topic is, we're going to talk about a couple of things, really. One is, what's the difference between an argument and a debate? And the other is, if you're in an argument and you don't want to be, how are you going to defuse it? How do you get out of it? Being in an intense argument can be physically and mentally draining. Instead of yelling and arguing back, you should consider diffusing an argument instead, and you can manage your own emotions and learn how to communicate with someone effectively. You can diffuse an argument before it escalates too much farther. Before we get too deep into it, I'm going to wait until my co-host gets to a place where he can talk. I think he's on the road right now, so we don't want to distract him. He'll be home in just about 5 minutes. So in the meantime, I'm going to talk about the groups here that I said that you're not the only atheist or free thinker in East Tennessee or Knoxville. There are groups out there, and I'll tell you about some of them right now. First, there's the Atheist Society of Knoxville. It's founded in 2002, so we're in our 16th year now. ASK has over 800 members right now. And you can find us online at KnoxvilleAtheist.org. You can go to themeetup.com and search for Knoxville Atheist, or go to Google and type in Knoxville Atheist. It's just that simple. If you don't live in Knoxville, you should still go to Meetup and search for an atheist group in your town. Don't find one, start one. You can join Ask in person if you want to by going to their weekly meetup, which happens every Wednesday night. I'm looking at an old copy. At Black Horse Pub. It's on Kingston Pike in Bearden area. We get together for food, drink, and conversation. Everybody's welcome. That is, as long as you don't come to preach, proselytize, provoke, or punch. Thank you, Atheist Experience. Another large free-thinking group here in Knoxville are the Rationalists of East Tennessee. And they've been around for more than 20 years. RET has bi-weekly presentations and discussions. These are a little more formal than the ASK group, which get together generally for dinner. But the RET has presentations and discussions, and they hold their meetings on the Pellissippi State Campus near Hardin Valley Road. They meet the first and third Sundays in the Goins Administration Building Cafeteria Annex. And if that's too much to remember, just go to rationalist.org, which is their website, and click on Upcoming Events. Then there's also the Sunday Assembly, which started in England a few years ago and now is spread around the world. It's a no-God church setting for those who no longer believe in gods but still like the fellowship of a church-type gathering. They only meet once a month, however, on the fourth Sunday. So we'll have one like not this weekend, but the weekend after. And you can find them at the International Building down near the old fairgrounds. World's Fairground, on Sunday mornings about 10:30 to 12. Then there is the Secular Student Alliance. They're not really active so much now in the summer, but when the school starts back, be sure to look them up, or look them up now online in preparation of going back to school this fall. The Secular Student Alliance has programs to give camaraderie and community to any free-thinking high school or college student who would like to be involved in the free thought movement, or would just like to find other like-minded friends. Everybody needs friends, and atheists are no different. See, now, earlier in the show, we talked about the Atheist Call-In TV show. Well, it's called Free Thought Forum.
I don't know about that.
I don't know. You've been off the mark so many times about it. What have you heard? What have you seen?
Okay, so I know it's been on the air for a really, really long time, right?
No, well, 8 years.
That's what we're talking about, right?
8 years.
Well, I mean, it's been on for a long time. I just don't like how you have to answer your answer in the form of a question. I think it's a little, gimmicky. But it's still good.
No.
I think they should keep it up, but I just feel like, let's spice it up a little bit.
Yeah, that is a good show. And that would be a good atheist show if the questions were about religion or faith or...
love questions.
Huh? Yeah. Well, yeah. But it's not the show I'm talking about. It's not Free Thought Forum. And you can see that every Wednesday night, like I said, between 6:30 and 7:30. It's going on right now. Comcast Channel 12, Charter Channel 192 if you have that. Or you can watch it streaming online. If you don't have a TV, just go online and go to ctvknox.org. You can find also archives of some of their shows on YouTube, where a fan has been recording and posting them. Just go to YouTube and search for three words, Free Thought Forum Knoxville. Also, if you're interested in getting involved in either the TV or the radio show, you can just come to an Ask Meetup or an RET meeting and talk to us about it. You could be our next co-host or guest. I know a lot of people like to get active in this particular movement, and you feel that way? Come on down and talk to us.
I feel that way. I think I even got on the radio from just going to Ask Me. You came to me like, Ty, you want to be on the radio? And I was like, yeah!
Well, sure. Yeah, that's how you got started.
100 episodes later.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay, you want to get back to our topic? Are you at a place where you can talk now?
Yeah, I'm about to be walking into my front door right now.
Okay.
Cat's going to jump all over me, but I'm all good.
All right.
We're talking about arguments and debates, right?
Uh-huh.
So the reason why I was bringing this up was I like to post about, atheist, theist topics on the Internet. And the thing about Internet discourse is it tends to, due to the lack of a body language or a person sitting in front of you, also due to the anonymity of just, posting online.
Sure.
Inspire, how do I put it, the jerkness in all of us. We tend to get comments that are pretty short, not very empathetic. And whenever someone posts like something long, we're not sometimes willing to like read the whole thing and or if we do, we read in a ton of voice that may not necessarily reflect the care that they put into their writing. And conversations tend to end up in a series of debates. And what I've noticed is that there's a lot of parallels between that and when people talk and argue when they're face-to-face.
Mm-hmm.
They don't listen to each other very well. Emotions tend to overtake logic and reason.
Yeah.
And the empathy tends to be lacking. And so I wanted to make a distinction between being in an argument and being in a debate. I think they have different goals. I think it's important to discuss those goals. And maybe different ways that we can approach avoiding being in an argument when you find yourself in one. And maybe trying to find it and maybe trying to, like, change course to a more productive way of having it.
Well, let's start with defining our terms. Well, how would you define the difference of it between an argument and a debate?
Hey, that's a great question. I think there's different terms for argument. I've known of the classical sense. Like, if I have an argument, I'm trying to present a claim, and I have a justification for that claim, and I'm trying to present it to you. I think that origin of the word argument comes from that term. Like, I have an argument for the thing that I'm trying to present to be the case.
Well, yeah, but you're using the word in the definition, so that's no good. You have to give the definition without using the word.
Let me think.
Excuse
so
me.
I would define argument as the justification for a claim.
Okay.
How about that?
All right. Cool. And usually one of the differences is that they're more vested emotionally in an argument than you would be in just a debate.
Right. But I also think that that's a great point, actually. I think in modern times, though, we've taken the term argument and turned it into something where it's just two people screaming at each other.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
I
was going to use the old Monty Python argument. An argument is not simply the vouchsafing of everything that I say. You know, in other words, like, yes, it is.
But you know what? I think the modern term is what we're more familiar with than what it is. Like, it did start off with trying to present a justification for something that you might believe or something that you think is true, but it's now known as the thing that you do that tends to be very unproductive, heated, and overall stressful maybe for both parties. There are definitely people who like arguing, but it doesn't seem to be a good way of conveying a justified point to support something. Because most people in arguments, I think the distinction between this and debate, which we can also define, is that when you have an argument, at the end of that argument, neither side tends to really done a good job of changing each other's mind.
Yeah.
Both for the audience who was watching the argument or the people who are involved.
They don't find their needle moved one way or the other by the end of it.
Yeah, I know. But they may find it really entertaining, and I'm sure it sold a lot of TV show seasons for stuff like that.
Sure.
But I do think we have this thing called a debate, and a debate, in my sense, would be a formal argument. How do you feel about that?
That sounds better.
Mm-hmm. And that's where both sides take a turn to express their points of view in a more serialized format. Maybe there's like a intermediary who like helps say, hey, it's this person's time, it's that person's time.
And rules to follow.
Right, and there's rules to follow. And because it takes place in front of the audience most of the time, most of these debates, there is, there's pressure not just on conveying your points well, but doing it in a way where you can feel confident by doing it. How do I put it? You are basically presenting it not in a way to where you're trying to change the person's mind who has the counter opinion, but you're trying to convince the audience that you have the best position. And so you're putting on sort of a show. You're trying to make sure that your side looks good. Even if you're wrong, you're trying to look as good as possible to the audience. So you'll smile. You'll appear as most affable person on the set. And maybe you get your point across well. Maybe you get some people on your side. But at least now you're not arguing with each other. But it could still be just as stressful.
Right.
Between those two, I think you may not get the person that you're talking to's needle to move, but at least you're presenting yourself in a better way. And you might actually convince people in the audience who's listening to you. Much better than an argument.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, in my opinion, and we won't have to talk about it on this topic, but I think the best way to have these kinds of conversations is similar to like the street epistemology method I had mentioned before, where you are actually trying to talk to the person in front of you, and they are your audience, and you're not trying to change their mind, you're trying to help them change their own mind. And I think that's far more effective as far as trying to have an honest conversation with someone than going in there with the motive of, well, whatever you believe, I'm going to try to make you believe the opposite of it.
Yeah, as you said,
I want to hear you out.
You don't attack their conclusions. You discuss their method of arriving at those conclusions.
Exactly. And if they have a good method and it leads to a really good, like, you know, way of thinking, you want to put that in your own pocket as well.
Sure.
Because we're all looking for good methods to really think. But if not, we can work on that together. And I think that teamwork and camaraderie goes the distance. But anyway, we're talking about arguments and debates. And, like, I think we talked about, like, the difference between the two. What do you do if you find yourself in an argument? And how do you get out of it and turn it into something more productive, like a debate or maybe a FD conversation?
Right. Excuse me. Arguments, like I was saying earlier, you're usually more emotionally vested. And if you're an old person like me, and you could actually get apoplexy from it and fall over and get a heart attack.
Oh, man.
So what you want to do is get yourself out of arguments if you possibly can. And another thing about arguments versus debate that I don't think we talked about too much is usually arguments, you think of people as just shouting claims at each other and not really presenting much evidence. They want to put their views in front of you, and they do it by shouting claims. Where in debates, generally you present as much evidence you can, whether it's physical or rational or verbal, whatever. You get the claims out there, and you also discuss the methods by which you achieved that evidence. So I think that's a big difference.
Now that you just mentioned it, I'm thinking I'm seeing. So the way how I saw it when I was doing my presentation was, there's three things: the person, the method, and the conclusion. Right.
Right.
The person is the person that you're talking to. The conclusion is the claim that they're making, the final statement.
Uh-huh.
And the methodology is the through line that connects the person with their conclusion.
Right.
So I'm in an
go ahead.
Go for it. Oh, I was saying when I'm in an argument with someone, I tend to make statements that target the person. And that's taken as an immediate, like, personal offense. Like, how do you believe that? Like, how can you honestly take that seriously? What's wrong with you? Like, things like that can make a person want to make
and more. Even if you are not attacking them and you're attacking their conclusions or their claims without attacking their method for arriving at the claims, they're so vested in the claims that they perceive that you're attacking them personally, especially in the arena of religion.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Spirituality, maybe even sports fans. I don't know if that might be true holy ground.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. But I also think that when I'm in the debate, my objective is never to, like, really talk about the person, but stick to the conclusion. Like, here's my conclusion and why it's better than his conclusion.
Yeah.
Here are the facts from my conclusion.
Right, the method.
Here's why his conclusion doesn't make as sense as my conclusion.
Uh-huh.
And, again, I feel like, again, you are attacking the outer ends of that, and it's different because at least now you're not how do I put it, trying to attack the person personally. But if it wasn't for the audience being there, they might take an offense to some of the conclusions arguments that you're making.
But actually, I've actually seen people in arguments attack the person verbally. I mean, you know, you're fat. You know, you're dumb. You're ignorant.
Well, you're wrong.
Right. And it may be that you're dumb or ignorant. You may, in that particular instance, be speaking, you know, facts. You don't know. But those are called ad hominem attacks. And you don't want to use those in debates, and you certainly don't want to use them in arguments unless you want to ramp up the emotionality of the argument.
So could you explain what you mean, or not only just what you mean by ad hominem, but like why is it not an effective way to show that someone's being
claimed? Okay. Let's say that you talk to somebody about Einstein, or let's say you're arguing with Einstein. You say, how far did you go in school? He said, well, I dropped out, you know, in the sixth grade. He said, aha, you can't possibly be right about your special theory of relativity. You don't have an education. You know, you're ignorant.
Mm.
And, you know, even in his case, he got his education later in life, you know, through self-study and all that. It has absolutely, the ad hominem attack has absolutely no bearing on whether the argument that the person is putting forward is true or not.
Yeah, it's something that's completely unrelated to the topic at hand.
The claims that they're making rely upon the arguments and the evidence that they present, and they have to, the claims have to stand on that evidence and argument. And ad hominem attacks don't do anything but just raise the temperature of the argument.
It's like if I had gotten a trophy for playing, like I won a guitar music competition, right?
Uh-huh.
And I bring the trophy and I show it to my friends and they're like, you won a trophy? Well, didn't you get a, like, you think you're a really good guitar player? How can you think that if you got like a speeding ticket on the way back home? Like, are you really that good of a guitar player?
Yeah.
Like, what does that have anything to do with the fact that I won this competition? Like, let's stick to the situation at hand. Like, this random attack that you're going on my character for getting speeding tickets has nothing to do with the fact that I'm bringing you objective evidence that I am good at playing guitar. Things like that.
Yeah. And it's just a way of talking past each other. You're not actually addressing each other's evidence.
Sorry, I was arguing with myself for a second at that point. I'm like, how dare you bring up these imaginary tickets? Anyway. But yeah, I think it's absolutely true. I do think that you can get heated when you make personal attacks. And the weird thing is, when it's something that's very important to the person, they are going to take comments aimed at their belief or them personally as the same thing, as one and the same. And we'll see that we know people personally identify with like their religious beliefs because they'll say things like, well, I'm a Christian, or I'm an atheist. They'll say things like, I'm a Baptist.
Yeah.
They identify as the label of the religious group that they are in.
Right.
And it's one and the same for them. So to say, hey, your conclusion is wrong because X, Y, Z, and you can do that in a debate, and they might smile at you and be like, oh, well, you know, I was there too, but you know, instead I've learned a lot, and I just wish you were there with me, buddy. Let me explain to you why this is actually missing.
Right.
And then you get those little snippy things in debates. Same thing happens in arguments, too. You just had more, you know, ferocity with it. But I think what we should be aware of is that there's a more productive way to have these kinds of conversations, but maybe we can talk about that in another show. What I'm really more interested is in trying to find a way to avoid having the arguments. Let's say you're already in an argument right now.
Uh-huh.
How do you get out of it?
Right. What are some of the ways that you can diffuse the situation or absence yourself from the argument?
Mm-hmm. I think we should do it in a stepwise manner. What about you? What would you suggest if, like, one of the first steps?
Well, go for it.
I'm still getting my stuff together.
Oh, okay.
Do you have the list?
Yeah.
Do you have the list?
I have the list. Hold on.
Sweet!
Yeah. Okay. Step number one, calm yourself down.
Awesome.
Imagine, you know, isolate yourself, breathe deeply from your diaphragm, take a deep breath in through your nose, exhale through your mouth, count to 1, 2, 3. Each inhalation, exhalation should last for a full second. Continue to breathe and count to 10 mentally as you breathe, and you should start to feel your body calming down. So this is something you can do even in the presence of the other person. You can just stop talking and calm yourself down by taking some breaths in through the nose, out through the mouth. That was something that was taught to me in karate. It gets more oxygen directly to the brain because you're breathing through your nose. You have more blood vessels in the nose that exchange into your brain quicker.
Very true. Yeah. I like
that. The second thing you can do is
calming down. Just one quick comment. I really, really like that idea. A lot of times we don't realize that the influence we have on a conversation, it's not entirely the person that we're talking to. It's really how we're conducting it, a connection between the two of us.
Sometimes.
And I have control over that. Yeah, sometimes. That's true. And I have control over a lot of the tempo of a conversation that goes back and forth.
Uh-huh.
And so if I can calm myself down, that has an immediate effect that I have control over in the conversation. So as long as I am willing to recognize that, oh, this is going in a weird, dangerous territory, let me take a step back, calm myself down, and that calms down half the conversation, and I think that's worthwhile.
Yeah, and it might be worth mentioning that sometimes you bring stress to the conversation on a totally different subject. In other words, you may be arguing with somebody over a parking spot or something, but you may have had a bad day that day. Your boss may have reamed you out, and then you're carrying that stress into the argument, and you start the argument at a higher level of anger than you normally would. So that number one can really help by calming yourself down, bringing yourself down to the level of what you're actually talking about before you can continue.
I think there's a good point.
Okay, should I go on to two?
Yeah, let's do it.
Two, excuse yourself from the conversation. Before the conversation escalates to a full-blown argument, remove yourself from the situation. Excuse yourself to go to the bathroom or tell the person that you need a second, and then just walk away. This space will give you time to think about the argument and your emotions. You can say something like, I'll be right back. I need to use the restroom. When I get back, we'll continue. And you do it.
That's the last one.
Yeah.
It's not so much like, hey, I need to leave and I don't want to talk to you.
Right.
Like, be quiet. I need
mm-hmm.
It's more of like, listen, I'm recognizing that I need to take a moment. I'd like to get back to you. I'm going to get up and go away.
Right.
And I'll come back.
And you're not trying to blame it on them or anything. You're not saying, I can't talk to you right now. You're being unreasonable.
Right.
I'm leaving. You're making a third party excuse to get away just for a minute to give yourself time to breathe and think.
I can tell you that can be really, really helpful, particularly if you're talking to someone that you love very much and you're trying to get through to them. I've had times where there's loved ones and I need to take a moment to, like, recognize that I'm not getting through to anyone,
mm-hmm.
particularly the people that I really respect and I love.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And I find, like, just giving a good excuse to, like, just get up and get away so that we can come back, letting them know that I want to come
right.
back later and talk about
right.
it. It's totally fine.
Mm-hmm. And the third one kind of goes along with the other two, because once you've calmed yourself down and maybe gotten away from the situation, you can evaluate your emotions. When you're alone, think about the conversation. Determine what is really making you angry in the first place. Look at the conversation as objectively as possible and reflect on whether you're mad over the argument or if you're angry over something else. So that's what I was saying earlier. Think of ways to verbalize it so you can communicate it to the person you're arguing with. You can say something like, I realized I was angry because of how you spoke to me earlier today. I wasn't actually angry about you not taking out the trash. As it were.
It's hard to be that lucid, and mm-hmm. I think it's something that takes practice, but it's definitely something that we can do if we're willing to give it the effort.
Right.
If you ever feel like that's a big step, try this. If you're ever like watching maybe like a TV show, if you're like ever having a conversation with a friend, and they do say something that kind of like hits you a little, but not really to the point where you'd ever like bring it up in conversation. Rationalize in your head, like, why am I upset? What did they say? Why did they say to me that I don't expect my friends to say to me? Let me make a note of that and understand what I don't like and like about that. And if it's ever brought up again, then you would already have had this time to, like, rationalize a good response. And then you could throw it out there and just like, hey, remember that last time that you said that? This old time also, I want to let you know how I feel about that, because I really care about this friendship too, and I just want to let you know that, like, I appreciate you trying to think. And
sure.
I think that's totally fine. I think that everyone's on the same page.
Yeah, if you can do that when you're heated, it's hard to do.
It is, and I think having the responses in your back pocket ahead of time is good. I also think it's just good to practice that as well in your head, even if it's not something that absolutely makes you upset.
Mm-hmm.
But also, like, you don't want to, like, necessarily approach someone about something that made you angry in the moment if you're not good at assessing how you feel about these sort of things in the moment. You want to, like, give yourself that time to think about it, and if you don't have that time, maybe find a better time to approach the person that you would have gone in an argument with much later on after the fact. And that's why I think it's good to just be able to, like, walk away, rationalize what's going on, and then come back to it at a later time when, you know, there's maybe more privacy and the opportunity is more opportunity to have these kinds of talks.
Right. Well, we're getting right down to the bottom of the hour. I'm going to have to take a break for station identification. We'll play a song. We have more things to go through when we get back, but we'll jump into that as soon as we do, because we've already gotten the organization announcements out of the way. So we'll be back in just a minute. This is WOZO Radio, 103.9 LPFM, live right here in Knoxville. Today is June 20th, 2018, and it's about 7:30. This is the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour, And here's one of those atheist songs that I was talking about. This is called There Is an End by the Greenhorns. And here we go.
Words disappear. Words once so clear. Only echoes passing through the night. Lines on my face. Your fingers once trace. Fading reflection.
Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on Wozo 103.9 LPFM in Knoxville, Tennessee. Feel free to join in on the conversation at 865-333-5937. That's 865-333-5937. And now, back to the show. Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
Simply the best.
And we're back. We were talking about how to calm yourself down or defuse an argument. And we talked about a couple of three things already. Let me go over them real quick. Breathe deeply from your diaphragm. That will have an effect of calming you down. Excuse yourself from the conversation without blaming it on the other person. Just say you need to go to the restroom or something. Just get away from the conversation just to have a little bit of time to calm down and rationally think about why you're arguing with this person and what part of it is important and what part isn't. Let it go. Evaluate your emotions. Think of ways to verbalize it so you can communicate it to the other person you're talking with. And reflect on whether you're mad over the actual argument or over something else that's unrelated. Let them know if it's not actually them. Okay, that catches us up. The fourth item on the list is think about the bigger picture. Sometimes we can get so engaged in an argument that we forget how the conflict will affect our long-term relationship with a person. Try to take a step back and think about the importance of the argument. If the argument is over something that isn't meaningful, it may help to calm you down and get a greater perspective, excuse me.
You know, something I like to do for fun at work is purposely start arguments about trivial stuff that's just fun to talk about. And it's just a good way to, like, get, how do I put it, like a sparring out of, like, I'll say, hey, there's a new Pokemon game coming out, if you didn't know. Like, let's go Pikachu, let's go Eevee. There's this craze that went on with smartphones called Pokemon Go, mm-hmm. and they're finally making a console
right.
version of the game.
Yes.
And you get to choose your starting Pokemon, which is like a classic for the series. And one is Pikachu, which is like the all-star most popular Pokemon of all time. But the other one is Eevee, a much more lesser-known, but
yeah.
objectively better.
mm-hmm.
That's where the,
right.
where the argument starts.
Yeah.
Pokemon, but that has so much more potential.
Mm-hmm.
It can evolve into so many different things. It's cuter. It's just much more versatile. And so I will say that, anticipating people to, like, pick up on the other side of the argument, regardless of where I stand on it. And it's just fun to have, like, a fun back and forth. The overall picture, though, is that, hey, we're both friends. It's okay to have a dumb argument about something, and we're not getting personal. We're just having a fun time having a conversation. And I think a lot of times it's easy to lose that perspective,
right.
especially when you're in something that's really serious.
Yeah.
And so always keep in mind, like, hey, you might be talking to someone that you really care about who also cares about you. It just has this one, you know, thing that's really important to them. And if you touch it or approach it in the wrong way, they're going to react in the same way they would as if they were protecting something that was like the most deeply held treasure.
Right.
Have a bigger picture.
It depends
picture
on
in
how vested like, they are in the results of the argument or the concept
that
they're holding.
Yeah, and if you approach them on like the religious topic, they may have never had an opportunity to question themselves on the things that you're questioning them with. And so, of course, they might react to that in a really weird way. They don't have the emotional security to deal with it any other way than that. So be mindful of the bigger picture. What is it that you're actually talking about? Is it meaningful to them? And if it is, you need to be considerate of the fact that they may not have ever questioned that in a constructive and in a helpful, productive way. So gauge, you know, like the importance of the thing that you're talking about. If it's something trivial, have fun. Dig into it.
Right.
But if it's something that's important to them,
mm-hmm.
take a step back and realize that, you know, you might be on uncharted territory for the both of you.
True. You were coming and going audio-wise during that talk, if you might want to look at your audio situation there. But
okay.
It was muffled and then not muffled and muffled and not muffled. I just thought I'd let you know.
Okay.
The fifth thing on our list, by the way, we should give credit where credit's due. This is on the wikihow.com website, and it's how to diffuse an argument or how to, what is it, three ways or five ways to diffuse an argument. And it's a really good page. It's got a lot of good graphics on it, and as we're discussing, it has good points that will help you in a situation like that. Number five, return to the conversation once you've calmed down. It's important that you return to the person and continue the conversation after you've calmed down. If you don't, the other person may not understand how you feel, and the argument is likely to come up again, and he may even think that you're avoiding him or her. Once you've thought about your emotions, you can go back to the conversation with a level head. Once you come back, you can say something like, okay, sorry about that. Are you ready to talk? And continue
yeah.
on.
And I do think it's important to come back only after you've calmed down. It's no use going back in and starting round two of the same conversation
right.
or same argument.
Yeah. And that whole first five arguments or points that we just made was how to calm yourself down, how to diffuse an argument. There's another whole method here that could help, and it's called how to turn an argument into a conversation, which would probably be about the same starting point where you calm yourself down, rethink the argument, and reapproach it. Number one under that category comes up and says, ask open-ended questions. Ask questions that will open up the other person and help you understand their point of view. Acknowledge their feelings and listen to what they have to say, then respond by asking them questions that would require more than one word answer. Focus your questions on how they feel and what you can do to prevent arguments in the future. You can say something like, how did the experience make you feel? Or you can say, I get why you would be angry. What would you prefer for me to do in the future? And that lets them express their thoughts and emotions on the subject, and hopefully turning it into a conversation.
So if you're caught in a religious argument, what would some recommendations that you would have, Dadasai?
I think if I wanted to turn it into a conversation without elevating it at all, I would probably revert to the methods of street epistemology. Ask them about their method, about how they achieved their determination about their claims and their beliefs. Get them talking about the method instead of attacking the claims.
I think what's the most important part about street epistemology too is that while that's definitely effective in towards exploring how they feel, a big component of it is just listening. And I think one of the most important parts towards turning an argument into a conversation is just listening to the other person. What do you think about that?
Yeah, that's the next point, actually, in the list.
Wah-wah.
Listen to the other person. Practice active listening and avoid interrupting the other person. Concentrate on what they are saying rather than thinking about how you're going to respond. The more you listen to them, the more you'll understand their point of view. And you don't have to be in an argument to practice this. You can, whenever you're talking to somebody, listen. Even if you agree with them on pretty much everything you say, listen to them. Practice listening. And that way you'll be able to get more insights into where they're coming from, what kind of person they are, and understand their point of view. And then when you get into an argument, you'll have that down, at least part of it.
I know this sounds a little weird, but coming from a deaf family, you can listen with more than just your ears.
Oh, sure.
You should look at the body language that the person's, exhibiting. Like, is their arm crossed? They're leaning away from you. Mm-hmm. Are they looking away? Are they trying to get away from you?
Right.
Like, these are things that you should be noting as you're talking and respect. Mm-hmm. Because if they're giving you positive body language, you might be on the right track toward getting that argument back to the conversation. And if they're still giving you body language that they're off center and they're not necessarily happy to see you, maybe it's not the best time to talk to them, and maybe you should spend more time being very delicate and gentle, trying to get them back into the state.
And this is particularly important to teenagers to try to pick up on these signals that the people of the opposite sex would send, because they're not very practiced in that. I mean, they don't really know how to recognize these signals without actually researching it and looking into it, and then it'll make them a much better person to be able to interact with, on dates or even just meeting guys or girls, in the class, and be able to understand if they're into you or not. If they're not into you, that would be a good time to move on to somebody else.
Exactly.
So a lot of the problems that they get into is that they don't see the signals and they just keep on going forward, and then you get in trouble.
Right. I also think television or Hollywood in general tends to make it such that, in most of your rom-coms, you'll have the first dismissal, the second dismissal, the third dismissal, and then something crazy happens and they're both involved. And then they suddenly love each other, which makes people think that, oh, yeah, if she says no the first time or if he says he's not really interested, just keep it up and stalk him and, be plucky about it, and then eventually you'll fall in love. But most of the time it's not that. You have
it's
to be
not
realistic
that.
With your expectations.
Right. Right. Okay, that was number two, which was listen to the other person. Now we look at number three. Look at the argument in the third person. High emotions can make people irrational. After you listen to the person, try to take a step back from your emotions and look at the argument from a third person's perspective. This may help you see their point of view and assist you in understanding why they may be angry.
So a good way, I like the third, there's an argument or there's a strategy in street epistemology called argument from the third person.
Mm-hmm.
When someone says, I really like X, or I believe in God, because, he came to me and spoke to me in my dreams or something like that.
Yeah.
Instead of directly countering that as the person in front of them, what you will do is present a third person, a hypothetical third person to the table, and you'll say, hey, so if there was another person at the table who said that they believed in a different God based on a dream that they had, would that be a good way for them, or would that make it automatically true? Is that a reliable way for them to come to a God belief, et cetera?
Right.
And it's a good way to just direct your criticism at a third party that both of you guys can analyze, that ideally won't be taken as a defense by the person who's sitting in front of you. And
right.
It surprisingly is really effective.
Uh-huh.
I like third-person arguments.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's another whole area. There was a guy who wrote a book on the outsider's take on your religion. Do you remember that?
Okay.
I can't remember.
Outsider Tests of Faith?
Yeah, Outsider Tests of Faith. Who was that argument made by? It was a book. Anyway, look it up, Outsider's Test of Faith. And what you can do is when you're talking to a religious person who's really stuck in their view or their beliefs, ask them to look at their beliefs through an outsider's perspective. And that's one of the things that I use a lot as an atheist because, well, first of all, I was raised a Christian. I'm not an outsider to, like, Christianity. But when somebody comes to me with their religious beliefs, they may or may not be Baptist or Christian or Hindu or whatever, I say, look, I'm an atheist. All the religions out there want to convert me. Why should I choose yours? And that makes them think of it in an outsider's perspective. Because if they were raised from, like, babyhood on to know, you know, to learn about things like salvation and sin and afterlife and heaven and souls and all this stuff, and I'm coming to them and saying, try to picture this. I don't believe in any of that stuff. Why should I believe your religion has it right when all of these other religions don't? They're all coming at me. They're all saying that they're correct. Why should I believe you over all the other ones? And that makes them take a step back just a little bit and maybe get a perspective from my point of view.
Right. And I think the most important takeaway is if you have a criticism, and you want to present it to someone about their ideas or their deeply held beliefs, it's really valuable to use a third person as a hypothetical and bring up the criticism to that third person so that both of you guys can look at this example and course correct from there.
Right.
It's a surprisingly effective way to keep people open-minded rather than attacking them personally or their conclusion personally.
Right. Okay, moving on to number four. We've only got about 13 minutes left in the show. Yes, really moving. Rephrase their side of the argument. Many times, arguments arise out of miscommunication. Taking someone's argument and saying it back to them will let the person know that you're actively listening to them and care about how they feel. It will also allow them the opportunity to explain their side of things and prevent miscommunication. You can say something
right.
like, so what you're saying is that you don't like the way my friends talk to you. Is that right? And I know
I don't
you
like
use,
that way.
Yeah. I know that you use...
I don't like
use,
that phrasing of it.
Right. But I know this is something you use in street epistemology quite a bit. You listen hard.
Absolutely.
You listen good. And then you rephrase their side of the argument before you even go forward just to make sure that they understand
yeah.
that you know where they're coming from.
So that's the strategy of rephrasing is good for three different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
How does my body look? Good.
Yes, fine.
Great. The first reason why it's good is that it allows people who are talking and not thinking about what they're saying to reprocess what they've just said using different faculties than the ones that they use to express it. And it's surprising how effective it is to just have someone say a bunch of stuff and you repeat back the exact same stuff to them. And they will either discredit their own words
right.
or refine the position.
No, that's not what I meant. That doesn't sound right. Yeah. Wait, who said
so
that?
A good example of that is I had a lady who told me that there was a lot of scientific evidence for God. And so I said, okay, so it sounds like the point that you're making was that there's a lot of scientific evidence for God. Is that accurate? And she said, no. That's not at all what I said. I said there's a lot of scientists who believe that my God's real. And that's a
completely different thing.
Argument.
Yeah.
Completely different argument.
Mm-hmm.
Completely different route that you would take. And if we had taken the position of, scientific evidence, let's go down this route
mm-hmm.
of reasoning and see where it leads us, it would have been a rabbit hole. Like, it would have led to nowhere because her real evidence is that that's based on public opinion,
right,
on people who have authority and not necessarily a good methodology.
Yeah. That particular argument. Go ahead.
What is the name of that particular argument? I was going to ask you.
Well, I was going to give you an example of that type of argument. It's called the arguments from the argument from Steve. because a lot of times when you're talking to religious people, they'll say, you know, there's awful lot of scientists out there. We have a list of 800 scientists who don't believe that, or who don't believe that evolution is real. Well, the science community got together and came back and said, we can give you a list of 800 scientists who believe it's real, all named Steve.
Right.
You know, because there's such a huge amount of scientists is behind evolution. I mean, not only the biology and the paleontology and the embryology and just on and on and on and on, all support evolution. Even down to your doctor. You go to the doctor, ask him if he supports evolution. And 99 out of 100 will say yes, but of course the last one will say, no, I believe in Jesus. But so, you know, it's argument from popularum doesn't mean anything anyway. But
that's right. An argument from popularum it does not mean anything.
Right. But the argument from overwhelming evidence does.
Not only that, but it's a misuse of an argument for authority,
mm-hmm,
because the scientists are not an authority on supernatural, because we don't have any scientific means of measuring the supernatural. So by saying a bunch of scientists believe in my supernatural God, mm-hmm, isn't really a justification for belief in supernatural God. It just means that there's more people that need to justify their position,
mm-hmm,
if anything.
Yeah.
But I would say, and I'm probably, maybe we can do a couple more after this, but I wanted to mention the two more important reasons why I like rephrasing.
Yeah, go
One
for it.
Is if someone's steamrolling in our conversation with you and just talking and never letting you have the opportunity to talk, being able to say, so just so I can catch up with you, so I want to repeat this back to you, is a great way to just stop them from talking, because nobody loves listening to anything more than hearing themselves.
Yeah.
Their own words.
Yeah.
And it's a great way, it's a great strategy to,
mm-hmm,
put a little bit of brakes, like just tap the brakes on a conversation,
yeah,
and allow them to get used to hearing you say things back and forth, because a conversation works two ways.
And right.
If you're not injecting yourself in, mm-hmm, you're not allowing yourself to have
it. Unless you just want to let the other person monologue, you know,
like
villains do.
Right. if you're ever feeling yourself getting preached at, and
uh-huh,
it's like a never-ending preach, don't try to stop it dead. Don't try to stop it absolutely. What you should try to do is say, like, so I understand that quote that you're saying. Can I tell you how I hear what you're saying? Like, well, can I repeat, mm-hmm, that back to you? Or can I rephrase what you're saying? Because I want to make sure I'm caught up.
Yeah.
It stops them 10,000% of the time, or many times.
Yeah.
And allows you to just have a chance to interject, maybe throw in a couple extra questions, and have a good back and forth.
Right. And if that doesn't stop them, it tells you they're not interested in having a conversation in the first place. And you can just walk away.
Right. Right. But I also think it's useful because it keeps you on track as well. And that's the third part.
Yeah.
It's a good way to make sure that you are actually understanding the person as you're talking to them. And it shows that you're interested in what they're saying and,
uh-huh,
that you really do want to have a way to learn as they have learned it. And so if you are on track, if they're on track, if you guys are having good back and forth, just rephrasing is such a powerful tool to have when you're trying to turn an argument into a conversation.
Yeah, I had to answer the door. I'm back. We've got just just got a few more things to
do. I can go to the next point.
Yeah, go ahead.
So I think the last point that we can probably cover today is be honest about your feelings. And by that I mean sometimes in an argument people tend to beat anger with anger. And
right,
this can only escalate things and make them worse. Instead, let the other person know when they cross the line and are hurting your feelings, rather than getting angry and yelling. And there's really good ways that you can do that. For example, you could say, hey, you know, that hurts my feelings. Do you really mean what you just said? Being, like, as clear as that and somewhat serious is all that you'll need to convince someone who really cares about you not to say that thing again, or to maybe even apologize. And then hopefully you guys can get back on track on the bigger picture and have a more meaningful conversation.
Right. That's true.
But I also think that if you're talking in street epistemology and someone asks you a question, because a lot of times in SC I'm talking to complete strangers, and they'll come at me and they'll say, hey, You've been asking me a lot of questions about my faith. Where are you on this position? I'm totally fine with being completely honest with them because I want to have an honest dialogue with someone. And sometimes by me being open, I'm setting a good example for them to be open as well.
Right.
The goal of FSC, in my opinion, or the goal of these conversations I'm having, is to show that different people can have good conversations with each other regardless of what they believe. It doesn't show, it's not trying to trick people who are theists to be atheists or trick atheists into being
right.
theists.
Right.
The unbiased approach, and it requires both sides to be honest, and that's really important. So try to be honest in your approach. If people ask you questions, try to answer them, and try to ask honest questions in your own right as well. And the good methodologies will float to the top if you guys are both honestly working towards something good. And if you can't, then that's more of a sign on their part
right.
that they don't want to have an honest conversation.
Right.
You can move on from there, but
yeah.
at least you tried. So you need to be honest.
Yeah. The first couple of things that we were talking about were really concerned with keeping your own cool. In other words, keeping yourself calm, catching your breath, catching another look into the relationship or the argument from a distance, you know, to keep your own cool going. But what if the other person's running off with it, and, you know, they're getting angry and they're escalating.
Right.
Excuse
right.
me. Sorry. There's a few things that we can do. We don't have much time, so I'll run through them fairly quickly. You need
yep.
to keep your own tone of voice, even and calm. If you yell or scream at the person, you're likely to match their energy or vice versa. Keep a smile or a neutral expression. Keep your voice at a conversational tone. You can try to find something that you agree on. Agreeing on something that they are saying will help you in restarting the conversation and tone down the energy. Be willing to compromise. Try to find a middle ground where you can both agree on and try to go from there. Maybe that's just what you want to do before you end the argument. You know, find a place to compromise and shake hands and go your different ways. But if it's domestic, you can say something like, "How about this? I'll do the dishes Monday through Thursday, and you can do them on the rest of the week. How's that? Is that fair?" And then that kind of diffuses the other person, gives them something at least to work with. Use humor to lighten the mood. You can diffuse an argument with jokes and laughter. But don't do this
for... Be funny first.
Yeah. Don't do
this. And know if you're not funny.
Don't do this for serious arguments. Hold it for something that's a little above, you know, what you normally talk about and when you're heated. But anyway, that pretty much covered the conversation. I mean, the topic for tonight, which was diffusing an argument. And we got our information from the wikihow.com. And that's
right.
That should be another go-to place instead of going to Google every day. Go to wikihow.com and type in your question. A lot of times they'll have full articles that are addressing
right.
just that topic. Anyway, we got about a minute. Anything to say before we go?
Yeah, I would also say if you're in a debate, it's always good to use humor because, again, your goal is to try to get the audience on your side. And starting with a nice joke and being affable is a great way to show that, hey, not only do I have good arguments, but I'm also generally a good person, too. I'm a good
right.
salesman for these
right.
convictions that I have.
Right.
Hear me out. And it's a good way to add some sugar on the things that you're trying to say.
Sure.
Anyway, that's it.
Right. And this has been the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. We're on live on WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM here in Knoxville, Tennessee. And don't worry about hell. The only time to worry about is when they prove heaven and hell exist. And everybody's going to some other religion's hell, so don't sweat it. We'll see you next Wednesday at 7 o'clock. This is Doubter 5 and...
Wombat!
Let's go! And we'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye.
Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.